Hello and welcome. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. When thousands of government workers went without pay during that recent shutdown that lasted more than a month, it was rather shocking. Food banks made headlines because hundreds of furloughed workers were forced to go to soup kitchens or food banks to provide for their families. Some were just downright shocked that their circumstances changed so quickly and so dramatically. But many Americans, as it turns out, are at the same risk, the risk of finding themselves in financial dire straits. The Federal Reserve found last year, for example, that 25%, one in four Americans, wouldn't be able to afford even a $400 emergency cost. Just one emergency could literally descend an entire family into a tailspin. Another study indicates nearly 80% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. For many, in fact, a missed paycheck could spell disaster. So what are some of the silent needs that are taking place in our communities, and what resources are available to people, many of them working folks, facing an emergency? We're joined today by Ellen Hammerly. She's Vice President of Client Services at Catholic Charities of San Francisco, Marin, and San Mateo. Hi, Ellen. Thanks for being here.
Hi. Good morning.
Also joining us, Sean Brooks. Sean is Executive Director of Programming at the San Francisco Marin Food Bank. Sean, thank you for being there.
Thank you.
Literally being there, being on the front lines of what we're talking about today. So why don't we start with you, Sean? As you were looking at the imagery from that 35-day shutdown, and you saw people who were gainfully employed one day and then found themselves furloughed or without a job for the unforeseeable future or for the foreseeable, and then having to go to food banks, what did that shutdown reveal to you about people like that, working people in need of help all of a sudden?
Yeah, it really underscored what we've been saying for a long time, that there is just a lot of opportunity to for things to go wrong, and many of us are in that situation where we may need some help to try to make ends meet, and there are a lot of folks who are in that situation on a day-to-day basis, and this really brought home that it could be really any of us at any level where this could happen. So I think it was a good reminder to us and to the community of how vulnerable we are, and certainly living in this area, and everyone can be very stretched out in terms of trying to make ends meet with high costs.
Speaking of our area, during the shutdown, in total about 420,000 so-called essential employees were forced to work without pay. Another 380,000 or so were ordered to stay home without pay, and in many cases weren't allowed to go and get other jobs. Hundreds were then forced, after a few days or even a few weeks, to go to regional food banks around the country. So around mid-January, the San Francisco Marin Food Bank started reporting in that it was gearing up, and you ended up serving around 400 people in Novato, many of them Coast Guard workers and their families. Sean, do you know how many federal workers the San Francisco Marin Food Bank ended up supporting during the shutdown?
It's really hard to tell, Renee. We have a network of over 265 pantries providing weekly groceries, mostly fresh produce, around San Francisco and Marin counties. And, they are certainly, many of them are open to serving people, and we do not ask what people's circumstances are. You referred to a special distribution that we hosted up at the Coast Guard base in Novato, and serving about 500 people, and I think that was just indicative of some of the need there. in these communities. Obviously, a lot of federal workers, you know, work in San Francisco County and live in the Bay Area, and so we know that many food banks like ours really reached out and tried to message, you know, the opportunities that were available in the community. And you know, we have a database that can show people where they can access groceries on a weekly basis by going to our website and doing our Find Food link. So I think, you know, it's hard to tell how many of those. We did see spikes of participation, of inquiry. And then we had many calls in from individuals that we, you know, talk to around this issue. You know, just it was kind of surprising and shocking to get calls from organizations like the FBI, Secret Service, you know, that are here to protect the community, and to hear that they're struggling to try to make ends meet. So it was very sobering.
Ellen Hammerly, Catholic Charities provides just a range of services, everything from negotiating with landlords to food, shelter, and all kinds of assistance. What were your thoughts as you were looking at the images during the shutdown?
Oh, it's tragic. It's really such a sad situation for our fellow neighbors, families, children. So we also had many people reaching out to us during the month, and still working with us now to try to support keeping them housed safely and also providing food support services. So as many of the listeners probably know, Catholic Charities has been around for over 100 years. We serve 38,000 people annually. And last year alone, we served 4,000 of our neighbors to safely keep them housed. And I have to tell you, the stories that I hear from our clients are tragic, and they align with what we've seen in the last month, where you lose a job and you're on the street. So Catholic Charities has been working tirelessly for many years to try to support clients in finding solutions that are permanent, so they can remain housed safely and their children can remain free of returning to a cycle of poverty and homelessness. So for these families, in the last month, we've intervened more directly with eviction prevention services, different subsidy programs that we provide through our homeless prevention program, our assisted housing and health program, and SF Home programs. We also operate the two family homeless programs, which are coordinated entry system programs, in conjunction with the City of San Francisco, that work to provide outreach and support directly to homeless families in the Bay Area. So we do a lot of intervention work and have had to increase that and expand that in the last month to provide services to this additional pool of clients in need.
You know, it's interesting. I think even though the shutdown is over, I'm wondering if you're still seeing, to what extent you're seeing a residual impact. Because I can imagine that once you get behind, that there can be a domino effect, a residual problem. If you didn't pay this bill and then there's a penalty, or you have to pay some extra because you were late, or are people able to catch up generally, or does this kind of lead to a longer-term issue, Ellen?
Yeah, it's definitely a longer-term problem that, fortunately, we've been able to help solve through our subsidy-based programs and housing-based programs where we provide the direct support that clients need. One of the clients who is in our shelter is a single mom who lost her job and was divorced. And I find her story important to share with people because she's just like you and me. She's any of the furloughed workers. She's our neighbor, right? Mm-hmm. And when that crisis happened, she and her son moved into the car. And after a while, they couldn't stay in the car because they kept having to move around, and he was missing classes, and they were having issues with the school. So once she got into the shelter system and she restabilized her life, we were able to help her find housing. She found a job. Her son stayed in school. And she's just one of the examples of a success story. So she got herself out of debt that she accumulated and is now on track. And she actually gives back and helps with some of our families and comes when we do special food bank related services at one of our housing sites. So I just want to say it is our neighbors and our brothers and our sisters that we're talking about here. And they do have to take time and they need extra emotional and financial supports to get out of the debt and the situation and the trauma, really, that they experienced by losing their jobs, especially the furloughed workers, where they didn't want to stop working. They loved their work, and they wanted to continue that for our country. So for them, it was really particularly devastating because they didn't feel supported by their country. So stepping in, getting them out of that takes time. It can take months and years, depending on the severity of the situation. But we are here to walk them through restabilizing their lives and solving their problems.
It's interesting that you profiled a woman because I'm wondering if there is a demographically disproportionate impact when things like this happen. For example, Career Builder published findings showing that about 78% of Americans say they're living paycheck to paycheck, but it's 81% for women, slightly higher, but higher. And somehow that doesn't surprise me a bit. I was talking to someone yesterday about the fact that we were going to be discussing this, and she was quite frank. She said, there have been many times when if I had not gotten married, if I did not have that additional income, I would have been on the streets. So It appears that women are disproportionately impacted when things like this happen, when there's a sudden furlough or a sudden loss of job. Has that been your experience, Ellen?
Yeah. In statistics that I have, there's an estimated 3,000 homeless children living in San Francisco alone, and more than 85% of homeless families are headed by single women. So it is tragic. The other statistics are, you know, poverty has a disproportionate impact on persons of color in San Francisco. So it's devastating that folks with different socioeconomic backgrounds and races are impacted even greater.
Not to mention that women earn about 62 cents on the dollar to begin with. So there's just all kinds of reasons why that demographic challenge doesn't surprise me in the least. Sean Brooks, you know what? I'm wondering, when people watch the news and see that the economy is booming and the stock market is roaring and we're doing great, right? So why are people suffering? Why are people still living on this razor's edge? It seems to me that I'm sure that a lot of hardworking folks are asking themselves that question when they see that it looks like we're supposed to be in the midst of boom times. These are supposed to be the salad days. Why am I in this precarious position where one paycheck, one broken furnace, a transmission that goes out, and I'm underwater all of a sudden? Do you find that people are coming to your food banks kind of shell-shocked that somehow I must be doing something wrong? How did I end up here?
Yeah, I think you know, the irony of the situation is hard for many people to stomach, and you know, we live in a community with great resources, tremendous wealth, and we also have a community that really struggles. You know, we show one in four individuals living in our community struggles with food insecurity, and you know, so to have that while you know watching you know all about how people are you know really profiting from this boom, I know it is challenging. You know, many of the people we serve our senior citizens living on fixed incomes. Many of them are women. They tend to live longer than men. So, you know, I think that is, you know, talking about the kind of the gender gap, you know, that is a lot of who we see. But we have a lot of working families also accessing our programming. And, you know, how hard is that to have to work one or perhaps two jobs and then still try to reach out and try to get assistance? And as you pointed out, it just, you know, it can create a real cognitive dissonance that makes it hard and makes it hard for people to feel comfortable.
That's Sean Brooks, Executive Director of Programming at the San Francisco Marin Food Bank. He's joined by Ellen Hemmerly. Ellen is Vice President of Client Services at Catholic Charities of San Francisco Marin and San Mateo. And today we're talking about the need for community resources like food banks, like rental assistance, and other kinds of help for working people who, like those who were furloughed from the government a month or so ago, found themselves in need. And we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. 798-TALK, or you can email us at yourcall@kalw.org. Have you visited a food bank? Have you found yourself at one point maybe volunteering at a food bank, and then suddenly somehow circumstances found you on the other side of that need? Have you visited a housing clinic or other community resource for support? And if so, what was your need? 866-798-8255 is the number to call. So there was a headline that ran in the Washington Post during that shutdown, and it was a quote from one of the furloughed workers, and that quote was, "This is pretty humiliating." I'm wondering, Sean, when you see people walk through the door of the food bank, how much of what you're seeing is people who are working every day, making a contribution, gainfully employed, doing their best, hardworking folks, but who just find themselves in need? To what extent do you have to address maybe even just mental health issues, because people are just finding themselves in circumstances that they could never have predicted?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have an excellent point about this. And, you know, we recognize that it is challenging to ask for help. And, you know, we try to do our best to make our distributions of food look like farmers markets, you know, to try to have a festive atmosphere. You know, I think it is challenging. And, you know, we are all but in those same shoes. And so to be able to recognize that, you know, one of the things we really appreciate is many of the people who access our services or who have accessed our services give back and get connected, and they become some of the same people who, you know, host these distributions and run the distributions. So I think there's a lot of energy around that. And, you know, just referring back to the event we had with the Coast Guard up in Marin, you know, some of the spouses of the Coast Guard employees who are still working really organized themselves and really, you know, got connected with their community and felt a lot of outpouring of love and generosity in terms of people bringing food over to complement the food that we were distributing. So it just, you know, it really shows how this is an opportunity to really bring people together and to really have people support each other and feel supported. So I think on both ends, there's a lot of you know, feelings of isolation, but there's also a great opportunity for connection, and we see that. And, you know, we benefit from so many volunteers. We get about 38,000 volunteers coming through our doors every year.
Wow.
Supporting us here at our facility, and in addition, we work with thousands of other volunteers who run these programs out in the community to kind of extend our reach. So just tremendous generosity of time and spirit.
38,000, that is extraordinary. And my guess, I'm sorry.
Catholic Charities is similar. Mm-hmm. We have so many wonderful volunteers. I'm glad you raised that important point. The other thing, if I might add, is all of our 35 programs are based on a trauma-informed model of care. Mm. And so the humiliation that you mentioned that person expressed is deeply and profoundly painful. And so embedded in all of our services, whether it is eviction prevention or housing or aging care, whatever we do, is that how do we support you in healing from your trauma so that you can move forward with your life and make sure that your personhood is supported in that process so that you hold your value and trust in yourself and your family and in one another, in our communities, because we all need each other, right? And even despite the fact that we live in the shadows of wealth here, some of the partnerships we've been able to create have been with private corporations. So private-public work together is really starting to have a positive impact in the San Francisco Bay Area. So I do want to also mention the importance of that. And lastly, I just wanted to share the other thing we are trying to do here at Catholic Charities is intergenerational solutions to the issues of poverty, homelessness, loss of jobs, whatever it is, so that we're really looking to the younger generation to support them so that any achievement gap that begins very young in life can be solved so that the kids can stay in school and pursue their educations and rise up out of the strictures, the binds of homelessness, poverty, any of the barriers that are preventing the family from achieving beyond that over generations. So we're looking at that view in the long term as part of the solution to this crisis and the homelessness crisis in general.
Ellen, I'm wondering whether after, and this is just a guess, just wondering, after the furlough, did you find that there was more of an influx of volunteers? And as you said, you and Sean both are blessed with people who just do a yeoman's effort to help others. But I'm wondering if you started to see people walk through the door after that furlough and the shutdown, people saying, you know what, it hit me when I saw those images that there, but by the grace of God, I'm one paycheck away from that. Did you find that you had a little bump in the number of people who came to volunteer?
Definitely. I would say it was about 5 to 10% bump.
Wow.
And, yeah, and also talking to my staff and hearing their stories of going out to the community and supporting food banks or other resources as well has been tremendous.
That's great.
We like to give back as best we can. So, yeah, it's been helpful.
Yeah, we love the volunteers, yes?
Yes.
I must say I've been thinking the same thing, like, wow, you know, it doesn't take much in the Bay Area to really be in trouble. I'm originally from Ohio, so, you know, Midwest. When I, you know, tell them that if you earn over $100,000, just over 100 grand here, you still are considered living below the poverty level. You know, their eyes roll back in their heads. It's extraordinary what folks here in the Bay Area, what challenges they face. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Ellen Hammerly, Vice President of Client Services at Catholic Charities of San Francisco, Marin, and San Mateo, and Sean Brooks. He's Executive Director of Programming at the San Francisco Marin Food Bank. We hope you'll stay with us. We're going to take a brief break and come right back. Hello, welcome back. I'm Renee Kemp, and this is your call. I'm sitting in for Rose Aguilar today. We're podcasting the show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for the newsletter to find out what's coming up next. If you have a show idea for us, drop us a line at yourcall@kalw.org. Coming up tomorrow on Your Call, we'll discuss the future of black women in American politics. The midterm elections were a wave. There was a wave of black women running for and winning office, and now there is the viable candidacy of Kamala Harris running for president. More than 20 African-American women now serve in Congress, more than ever before, and certainly black women have been a driving change and empowered political movements for decades now. So where is their vision leading us, and what obstacles remain? Join us for the next Your Call. That's tomorrow. Today, we're discussing the need for community resources like food banks, rental assistance, and other kinds of help. That kind of need was revealed after the government shut down and the needs of furloughed workers became very clear. And we'd love to hear from you. If you visited a food bank, a housing clinic, or other community resource for support, we'd like to hear about your experience. What need was met when you sought that help? And if you work for a charity that provides support to people who find themselves unexpectedly in crisis, how can listeners support your organization? 866-798-8255 is the number. Ellen Hammerly is here from Catholic Charities, and Sean Brooks is here from the San Francisco Marin Food Bank. Let's take a call. KDF in Oakland, hi. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Renee. I really enjoy you being on Your Call. I followed you when you were a television reporter, and it's great to hear your voice again.
I'm calling
to mention a couple things. One is I did call Catholic Charities of the East Bay because I'm behind in my mortgage, and the woman kind of laughed and said, oh, well, we just deal with renters. And so then I found out about something called Season of Sharing, and they don't want to help me either. And I did want to mention the book, The Know-It-Alls by Noam Cohen, because I feel that if Silicon Valley was filled with people who have any kind of civic responsibility, that they would tax themselves in order to be able to underwrite poor people's utility bills. You cannot imagine how hard it is to pay for water, PG&E, and garbage if your total income is under $700 a month. And the other thing I wanted to mention was Michael Moore's movie, Which Country Are We Going to Invade Next? Thank you very much. Where the last shot was of a woman saying, I think she was in Sweden or somewhere like that, one of the Scandinavian countries, saying that she wouldn't want to live in a country that was so, she didn't say ignorant, but uninformed and childish as to not care whether all of our citizens were fed and housed. She just wouldn't even want to live here. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. So, Ellen, I'm going to invite you to address who comes through the door, who gets served, and how people are addressed when they call or walk through your door.
So, we practice deep respect for the dignity of every person, every client, all humanity here, and we make every effort to provide resources to everyone based on equity. I'm not sure it's very sad, that story that that person just shared, and I do hope someone can step up and provide support. We are restricted sometimes to geographic locations. So, you know, in San Francisco, you have to be a San Francisco resident to receive services, for example. But most of the time, in terms of subsidies, we are very resourceful in terms of our collaborative partnerships throughout the city to try as best we can to prevent any housing evictions, whether it's through paying a utility bill or supporting with mortgage payments or, you know, rent costs, whatever it is. So it's disheartening to hear of that caller's experience. And my hope is that someone is listening to this who can support her in solving that problem, because we don't want her to lose her housing and create another homeless statistic in the East Bay, our partner city across the way. So over here, if someone is looking for help, we are going to post information on our Catholic Charities website, so we hope that will be useful to you. You can also reach out to our communications team, and they can try to connect you with any resources we have available, and they can be reached at communications@catholiccharitiessf.org. And our phone number is 415-972-1200. Here at the main office in San Francisco, homeless prevention can be reached at 972-1301. And hopefully we are a rich, abiding resource and deeply embedded in our values of respect, accountability, and compassion for all.
Thanks, Ellen. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to another call. Mark in San Francisco. Thanks for holding on. Go right ahead.
Hello. As the previous person said, I am agreeing with the fact that it can be really hard to and intimidating, and it can be really tough to reach out for help, no matter how tough things get. I know myself and other people find that I feel like I have to solve this problem myself, and that there's no help out there for me. But my question is, and you may have answered it, is where would I go to help other people who are in dire straits in this situation? And I don't know if you've given those numbers out previously, but if you could repeat them, where I could go to try and help other people. I have talents, and I'm semi-retired, and I can do electrical work. I'm a musician. I was a stagehand, and the only other thing I'm going to say is I understand the feeling of hurting to ask, because I'm also a Vietnam veteran. And when I came back from Vietnam, when I got off the plane, when I got back, there were people standing at the gate throwing garbage and spitting at us, veterans, as we got off the plane. And so I know it hurts, and it's really hard to ask for help. But once again, please inform me as to where I can go to help.
Thank you, Mark. Okay, Ellen, I know you can't stay with us for the rest of the hour, so if you don't mind, would you mind giving out your contact information and, in
sure.
general, just talk about the most effective ways for people to help if they can?
Yeah, so as Sean was saying, we all have volunteer pools. We're very open and happy when people volunteer, so please reach out to us. We will post information on our website. You can email communications@catholiccharitiessf.org. Give us a call at 972-1200, 415 area code. And I do want to also acknowledge, Mark, I'm so sorry for your pain, your experience when you returned home. And I hope we've all been supporting you in healing from that experience, because we do appreciate and respect all you've done. And I would ask you to just be sure to trust in yourself and ask for help if you need help as well. Because from my experience, I've been here for over 20 years now, we all need help at different points in our lives, every one of us. And being able to ask is a really positive step in the right direction. And it's really important that we then reach back and support one another. So I hope you can volunteer with us or with Sean's organization and ask for help if you need it. We're here to help. Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen. Stay with us for one more second. Sean Brooks of the Marin Food Bank. For folks like Mark who want to step up and help, who may have means or maybe extra time, how would they go about doing that with your organization?
Yeah, we certainly benefit from community support. You know, the easiest, most efficient way to help the San Francisco Marin Food Bank is to make a financial charitable donation, and you can do that through our website. But also, as we've been talking about, you know, volunteers are critical to what we do, and so, you know, we also have through our website access to calendars for signing up to help with different shifts in terms of the work we're doing. We partner with a lot of different nonprofits that and faith-based organizations that provide distributions on a weekly basis, so that's always an opportunity too to kind of find out what's in your community. If somebody wants additional information, they can go to our website at sfmfoodbank.org. So for the San Francisco Marin Food Bank, and our phone number is 415-282-1900. So we're happy to help kind of forward people in the right directions.
Very good. I think people are always looking for some way to help. Ellen Hammerly, thank you so much for being here. Ellen is Vice President of Client Services at Catholic Charities of San Francisco, Marin, and San Mateo. You're
thank
a champ,
you so
Ellen.
Much.
Thank you so
much. It's
been
much. An honor. We really appreciate moving forward and effectively performing social change in our community, social justice, and together we can accomplish that. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Ellen.
Bye.
Hi. Sean, have you been able to restock since the shutdown? I imagine you had to kind of shore up your resources. What needs might you have that are ongoing right now based on having to restock after the shutdown?
Yeah, we're all... We distribute about 48 million pounds of food every year. 60% of that, approximately, is fresh produce. So we're getting truckload quantities of fresh produce every week, and that keeps coming in. In situations like this, where we have, you know, extraordinary need, you know, we definitely rely on the community and from our other donors to try to do more, you know, and I think that's all a continual challenge. I think it's you know, a testament that the city just reached out to us, and you know, I know one of the big side effects of the shutdown was people who received CalFresh benefits, formerly known as food stamps, you know, got their checks early for February, so they got it into the middle of January. So we're still experiencing kind of the ramifications of that, where people may have spent their benefits on food early and ran out. So we're now looking from here through the end of February at you know, trying to backfill some of that extra need people have. You know, we also were asked to come up with an emergency plan if the CalFresh program had not been funded for April. So if this shutdown had continued, had restarted and continued so that people didn't have benefits, there would have been over 35,000 households in San Francisco alone without critical support for food. And so, you know, how do we reach out in that kind of environment? You know, just extremely challenging, but, you know, just a reminder that food banks and all of our partner agencies are really resources here for the community if there is an emergency as well. You know, if we were to have a large earthquake, you know, we would be expected to really step up. And, you know, some of it's just having faith that the community will support us in these times. And, you know, we've always been supported in terms of these kind of efforts. People just understand that, you know, you need to eat, you need a place to stay, and so these are just critical efforts that you know, the community really, really gets, and we're so proud to be a member of these communities.
866-798-8255 is the phone number. Have you volunteered at one of the perhaps Catholic charities or your neighborhood food bank? What was your experience as a volunteer? And to what extent may have you found yourself on the other side of that equation and standing in need of help? What was your experience? You can also drop us an email at yourcall@kalw.org. Let's go to Raul in Daly City. Hi, Raul. Thanks for holding. Go right ahead.
Thank you for letting me speak. I don't definitely want to disparage any of the assistance that we're putting forth right now. I mean, it's important because of the urgency of the situation, but we still have to look at the underlying issues, and that these types of relief are a band-aid that will not stop what is the underlying issues that create the situation that we're in. And simply put, you know, we have to stop looking at how much money one makes per hour, because it's meaningless. You can always raise that. Yes, the essence of a stable life is how many hours one would have to work in a day and or a week in order to sustain a reasonable life. Reasonable being access to the essentials: food, clothing, housing, medical. And until we address that specific issue, it's going to be a spiral downward, because we're essentially just creating a universal labor force that has very little, if any, rights and can only survive with this type of assistance.
Thanks, Rahul.
I'm sorry, but I think we do need to look at it. And good luck.
Thanks a lot, Rahul. Well, Sean, you know, it's hard to argue that you engage in interventionist assistance in many ways. When someone is in crisis, whether it's right after an earthquake or during a work stoppage, government shutdown, furlough, job loss, you're engineered to intercede at the moment of crisis. What about the long-term need?
It's funny you use the word engineered. You know, in this part of the world, you know, our warehouse was designed to withstand the next earthquake and to be up and running, 24 hours a day after that. So, you know, we are in many ways, the first responders in our community. We have a warehouse full of food, and we are going to be seen as kind of the first go-to when the next big one hits. And, you know, I think that is a metaphor for what individuals and families are dealing with too. You know, I think this is a fluid system, and sometimes people, you know, have enough work to make ends meet. And I know, to Raul's point, it's getting increasingly hard to make that happen. And sometimes things happen, you know, like this shutdown, or, you know, someone loses a job, or someone in their family gets ill. And so I think that, you know, that is a benefit for us to be here and serving the community in that way for anybody who reaches that situation. That being said, you know, the long-term prospect is challenging. You know, how do we change this? And you know, these are societal issues that are beyond our scope. And to kind of get around that, we look at education. You know, we provide nutrition education to individuals in our community to kind of change how they access food. You know, we've really been part of kind of this growing food as medicine trend, where we look at food as kind of a basic preventative service, and you know, I think those are ways that we can really help kind of change the way we spend money in this country. You know, we throw billions of dollars at kind of high-end healthcare to address problems that really started at a basic level, where, you know, as a food bank, we're distributing 27 million pounds of fresh produce every year, and that is just, you know, a baseline of support that people can rely on. And many of our programs are in communities where they do not have regular access to full grocery stores. And so, you know, this is such a complicated issue, but appreciate the intentions behind, you know, addressing all aspects of that.
It is complicated. We have an email, speaking of the next big one. We're not out of the woods. Art in San Francisco writes, are we in San Francisco and the Bay Area in general better prepared now for a possible second shutdown? Because that's not outside the realm of possibility. Are we prepared now for a possible second shutdown or not? And if so, why? If not, why not, Sean?
Well, I think this was a good wake-up call, you know, and we try to learn from every particular event. You know, I think to that point, you know, if those 35,000 families and individuals lose their CalFresh food benefits, you know, how are we going to address that? You know, so the mayor's office reached out, and we provided kind of a proposal for rising up and providing additional food in the community, bringing in additional truckloads of produce and other other commodities. You know, but it's challenging. And to be honest, you know, food banks are a first responder in these type of events, but we cannot replace kind of public services. We cannot sustain the kinds of needs that could happen at a major level of a major disaster, whether it's man-made, if you will, in this instance, or natural. So, you know, how do we think about resiliency in the community, of people helping each other, of organizations like ours stepping in to help, and then at a certain level, we need to rely on kind of state and federal government to support us. And that's why this is a particularly challenging situation, to have the federal government, who is kind of the last stop, to be pulling away. And it just, you know, creates a lot of unrest and a lot of unease. You know, people do not feel comfortable, as you talked about before, Renee. You know, how are they going to guarantee that they can feed their families, feed their children? So it's just, it's a really hard situation.
Well, speaking of the federal government, Greg in Palo Alto has a question. Hi, Greg. Thanks for being there.
Yeah, thank you. It's not so much a question as a comment. First of all, I just want to say I appreciate the efforts that these people are making. I think that's noble. But let me just bring up a couple of points. One, contrast the way the people in Puerto Rico and the people who were in this affected by this shutdown were treated by the federal government, and the fact that the United States has shipped aid, supposed humanitarian aid, to Colombia to benefit the Venezuelan people, and we see what's happening there. So it's almost like here's the let them eat cake attitude by the federal government, and you know, look at the way our own citizens are being treated. The people in Puerto Rico are American citizens, and look at the way they got treated by Trump and the way this thing was handled by Trump. He showed an absolute callousness towards these people who were laid off, and yet he's willing to ship hundreds of millions of dollars of aid to people in Venezuela. So it just, it doesn't make any sense. It's criminal.
Thanks for that input. You know, I think a lot of times, Sean, there's this feeling that there is a limited pie, and that resources, that there's a finite amount of resources. And so people feel like you should take care of what's close to home, and my guess is that in the case of people who want to be of help in their own communities, that certainly benefits you. But what about people who feel that, you know, that there is a real tug on people's hearts? You watch TV, and everyone from and you know, you see puppies who are left out in the cold, they need help. You know, you see children abroad, they need help. How much of a pull is there on the resources of people who have means, and the federal government, for that matter, by extension?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely true that there are many things that deserve our support. And, you know, in many ways we have to prioritize, but I also, you know, feel that it's kind of a false dichotomy. I mean, we are such a wealthy society that, you know, to have kind of a manufactured crisis like this really kind of brings up the irony of the situation, where we have so much wealth and yet we still live, many people paycheck to paycheck, or even, you know, not having enough money to be able to afford a healthy three meals a day and pay for your medical care and keep a roof over your head. So, you know, it is tough, and there are certainly challenges. I mean, there are only so many places we can put housing in San Francisco, so I recognize there are ultimately limits. But you know, I think I go back to just looking at the generosity of this community and communities like this, and recognizing that we all can make a difference, you know, individually and collectively, and we need to bond together to make that happen. But there is so much more that can be done.
Got an email from Marty. He writes, speaking of volunteers, Sean, I was a volunteer at the food bank donation site in Marin. Marty writes, where we received donations almost nonstop for 3 hours plus on the day that he was there during the government shutdown. That included a man, he says, who identified himself as a sailor. He drove a large SUV, which was completely full of donated items. It was a very generous donation. So, you know, I think the idea that scarcity is, it's, I think it's like the big lie, right, Sean? Like you said, we live in a country that is so well off. And so the idea that there is scarcity to even be concerned about is a false choice. We have the means, if only we will. Yes?
I totally agree with you, Renee. Yeah, and we, you know, we saw that generosity. Marty was one of many people that helped at the distribution we had up in Nevada for the Coast Guard. And, you know, he's absolutely right. Just truckloads of food people bringing in saying, you know, I want to support you all, and recognizing that these are people that are supporting our society. You know, they're providing vital functions that we need to live our lives the way we do. And so, you know, again, just so rewarding to see that kind of generosity of spirit and resources. And you know, that's the kind of energy that we need to kind of change to move this around. I mean, we're in a kind of an awkward cycle right now, and it's very disheartening.
Well, we always see people volunteering at food banks like yours around Thanksgiving and Christmas, and people get that, you know, nice warm fuzzy feeling when they go to help out during the holidays. But how difficult is it, Sean, to get people motivated outside of those holidays?
I, you know, thank you for bringing that up, Renee. It is true that we all kind of think about kind of our neighbors at special times of the year, and we definitely get a bump of support. And right after the holidays, you know, it's not quite as busy in terms of the number of volunteers. So we struggle sometimes. How are we going to, you know, get all this fresh produce boxed up and out into the community? So, but that being said, we benefit from so many individuals, from so many corporations who send their family members, their workers to the food bank to support us. And so, you know, we have absolutely no complaints. You know, our biggest wish is that we had more space to be able to handle more volunteers to help us move more food out into the community. So, you know, there are definitely, speaking of resource challenges, that is a big one for us at this point that we're struggling with, because the need is there. And, you know, how do we really position ourselves for continuing to grow to support this community and being there again when times get tough?
Just out of curiosity, anything you get that's unhelpful?
You know, we get some funny things donated to us in terms of food that we kind of laugh about sometimes. But you know, I think it, you know, we are here to provide food to the community. So we, you know, we're blessed to get all kinds of foods donated to us. You know, again, we bring in truckload quantities of fresh produce, and so the most efficient way for us to convert financial donations is through you know, accessing fresh produce from the Central Valley.
Okay, Sean, thank you. That was your pitch, right? Food. We do food. That's Sean Brooks of the San Francisco Marin Food Bank, and thanks to Ellen Hammerly of Catholic Charities. I'm Renee Kemp. It's your call.